All right. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. It is time for the Burning Platform. This is where we go to meet the political leaders who are all standing for election this year, this very important election year in South Africa. And Pumi and I, along with Canthan, are ready to take you into a discussion with someone who is a luminary and a wise elder in our political system, someone who has been there. He was one of the first people to do what has now become very trendy, to leave the ANC and start his own thing, you know? But he was the original gangster, the OG, is that right?
Gave Julius the blueprint.
Yeah, he did. Well, he
and
did.
And governable youth.
Yeah, he did. He started it. He is none other than Bantu Holomisa. How are you, General?
Yes, the General himself.
Hey, Canthan. Canthan's here too. You just snuck in.
No, but he's late. He's ungovernable. He's,
I am ungovernable.
he should have been here 7 minutes before time. Eh?
Uh-huh. I agree.
We need to shambok him.
You know, you're speaking the language. One of our listeners
here. They're going to have to cut my pay here.
One of our listeners, General, has got this to say. His name is Congo Chris. He wants to start something called the Shambok Party. He says, my values include shamboks, shambocking corruption, shambocking crime, and shambocking unemployment.
No, that's my friend.
You want him on your team?
Yeah, yes.
All right. Well, first of all, how are you doing and how is the UDM?
We are okay and looking forward to participate in the forthcoming election. And I think we have complied with all the requirements of the IEC, so we are ready.
Some of these parties did not comply and have suddenly gone very quiet.
I can't wait for that list when the list finally comes out that says this is what we're looking at. This is who's going to be. I cannot wait for that list to come out.
Well, I don't think list is important more than what message will the voters expect. So, list.
We're going to have a long, full discussion about the UDM, but I do want to start here, which has nothing to do with, well, something to do with a little bit of the UDM, but today, some of us went to bed last night with this information, and a lot of people are going to wake up this morning to the Takatso deal being over. Mm-hmm. And you were one of the very first people.
I was the only one who queried it from the start.
How do you, and so with this news?
Well, I'm happy. At least our long term campaign has finally been successful, if I may put it that way. I wrote to the president, I wrote to SCOPA, as well as to the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprise, saying that on what basis is this deal going to be accepted? Was this discussed at cabinet level? Did the Portfolio Committee know about this? Why are you selling a national asset of this magnitude for a song? And then Cyril Ramaphosa, if you remember, Cyril issued a statement after that saying that this deal is not yet complete. So they are still busy with due diligence. But I said, if you recall, I said, oh, this sounds like a tactical withdrawal by the president. his minister came back again with it. But I'm happy now that he has finally, and he was nailed in the closed session by the UDM's Mabayomsi Kwankwa, my deputy. And then he thought he's going to just run through it with his own colleagues. But Mr. Kwankwa raised some pertinent areas and issues with him. And he was very angry. Mm. That's why a week after that he said he's leaving.
Is that why he's resigning? Yeah. He's having a full tantrum breakdown.
It's clear that that transaction was never in a good state.
Well, if ever I'm, this is a good place, I think, to segue to, if ever there is a view of what even the smaller parties, their voice can be in parliament.
Well, we're just true. In terms of numbers in parliament, we've got 2 seats, but that doesn't matter. We don't even feel that we are 2. If you listen to us, you'd think that we're one of the major political parties. But we use experience. And having been head of government in Transkei then, it has taught me how to deal with some of these corrupt practices. And if you look at what we have done, starting from the time we said there has to be a legislation to replace the floor crossing legislation must go.
Yeah.
And we succeeded. There is no longer in our statute books. And we also campaigned against the chairperson of IEC, Phindi Tlakula, to say she must go because she has messed up there, corrupt relationship, corrupt transaction. We also went to Concord to say, if we can elect a president secretly, why can't we vote secretly if we say he or she must go? We succeeded on that. It was again the UDM which led a group of people to say electricity, this load shedding must not affect hospitals, schools, as well as police stations. So you don't have to have numbers. What is needed here is quality and consistency. I can't even talk about the campaign of calling for the president to institute commissions of inquiries. Party Commission on PIC, that was a campaign of the UDM. We succeeded on that. Look at this one now. What is it?
Taka-taka.
So what then is on the agenda of the UDM going into these national elections?
Well, I think the first thing is that the truth of the matter is that the South Africa is in crisis. And we have to close ranks in finding a solution. That's precisely why UDM is calling for a national dialogue immediately after elections. Whether one wins with majority or through coalition, but still, let us meet and try and finish the job we didn't finish during CODESA, namely the economy of the country. And high on the agenda of that economic discussion is question of land and property. And also we need to make sure that the civil service of South Africa is trained and exposed to sophisticated training. That includes the law enforcement agencies as well as the NPA. So there's a lot which needs to be attended to. Of course, we have to ask ourselves, how many black South Africans in the last 30 years have been trained or produced or as industrialists? Because if we don't invest into these 55 plus million black South Africans, we can't be queuing every day to go and look for jobs from companies which are owned by by minority white population. We have to invest on our own people. Let's have our own entrepreneurs. Let's have these people being wealth creators so that they can create jobs.
General, I think most people who are listening right now and watching us are going to agree with just about everything that you've said so far. Mm-hmm. The question really is, how do we get from here to there when we haven't done so in the past 30 years? And I'd just like to take us back and get your view on this. During the time that you were running the former Transkei, and there's still people to this day who talk about that period as the glory days in terms of the former Transkei. I have a very close friend who regularly commutes between East London and Mthatha, and is constantly harking back to the days when you were actually running that in, you know, obviously before 1994. Mm. What did you get right at the time that subsequently fell apart, I think is the question. And more importantly, how do you then take those things and implement them again?
Well, it's about a discipline, first of all, from the leadership you work with. And also, if you say any minister who is involved in issuing a directive laced with corruption to say a certain tender must be given to so-and-so, that minister must immediately pack his bag and leave. So fortunately, I've never had that experience. They listened to me. I said the role of a minister is to do an oversight. The DGs are the accounting officers. Right now, the powers of the DGs have been usurped by the political heads of almost every department. So that is why the level of corruption is so high in this country, because the ministers have usurped the powers of those accounting officers.
Hmm.
So what we need to do now is to instill discipline from top to bottom and put time frames. If you have agreed about a plan, the implementation of that plan must be done such that you put time frames, especially if you have a budget, to say, this is the plan from this department. The department, the president's, which is responsible for monitoring of the departments and ministers and so on, should be doing their work. And also, if you draw a line and say, please, don't cross that line, people must listen to you.
But this starts with the president, doesn't it?
And if that's why I'm saying, that's why I'm saying, if the discipline is not there from the top, don't expect the ministers and other people in the government to toe the line.
Why you mention the president, Kenton? Why do you have to spoil a nice conversation?
So I mentioned the president, Gareth, just simply because the way in which our parliamentary system is structured right now, we don't actually have the capacity to hold the ministers accountable, you know, because the ministers themselves are appointed by the president.
Mm.
And the president generally ignores whatever comes out of parliament in terms of whether or not the ministers themselves are doing their jobs, which is why this entire SAA fiasco was possible in the first place, because parliament is not in a position to hold the individual ministers accountable. And I don't know whether you have a solution, General, in terms of what type of changes need to happen in Parliament, I guess.
No, there's no need to change it in Parliament. But if Parliament approves the legislation, they make laws. But who is implementing the laws? It's the executive. I mean, if a minister, we say Minister X is not performing, the president has to assess that. Unfortunately, you know, he is the one who recently said, I cannot publish the assessments of these ministers because they are going to embarrass my party and my government. He should have been told to leave himself. So this is serious. I mean, look at the speaker currently. He's running around all over the world because he doesn't want to be arrested. Policemen are looking for him. And we wrote a letter to the president to say, this person, this Minister of Defense has done A, B, C, D, E. Can't you investigate? And he kept quiet. Instead, he rewarded him with the most important position of being a speaker. No. These people are almost the same.
So what are the priorities? Because Pumi always asks this question to make it fair for everybody who comes in. And the UDM has obviously got its list of priorities. And Pumi will read, you know, the manifestos of these things. But most people, General, are not going to read this stuff. So they want you to make it easier for them.
Listen, there are at least two one app and one website that I have since discovered that will do the work for you and just give you the salient points. I'm just saying.
Okay. Well, there's AI. Right?
There is AI.
But what are your main priorities? And for the people who will vote UDM, what do you think the messages are that they're going to want to hear?
Well, the people are concerned, firstly, about their safety.
Yes.
So, secondly, the people are also concerned about high levels of corruption. Because this corruption money should have been used to create jobs for other people. And this money should have been used to fix our infrastructure in terms of maintenance. And then the other one is a question of lawlessness. I mean, sometimes it's a cultural shock for some of us who are been trained in the military, where one can just block a highway with a truck and then start robbing a vehicle which is carrying money in broad daylight. So, which means this corruption now has even affected the law enforcement agencies. As you have seen, people now are scared to stop in roadblocks if they are stopped by people who are wearing police uniform. You ask yourself a question, are they the real police? And so on. So that kind of setup is has to be attended to. The last one, of course, is the question of our energy, load shedding and so on. And we don't seem to be moving fast to solve it. I mean, for the last 15 years, and then we've been told different stories. The reason why there's load shedding is because the coal is wet, the maintenance, and something has tripped and so on. No, ANC has been lying to us. And the best way to solve that would be, one, we've gotten bilateral agreements with many countries. If we have a new government, I would say, let's go to those two countries, give them an assignment for free to assess what is the problem of our ESCOM. And then having have that those two reports, then you can at least start to solve the problem from an informed position. Remember that the issue of deploying cadres in all the institutions of government in South Africa has affected the performance because they were not screened, they are not competent, and they don't qualify. Starting from the time Hitachi was given the tender to build Kusile and Medupi. Guess what? Hitachi came up with the Chancellor House in their pocket. Chancellor House don't even have one single engineer. But they ran away with, 38 billion rands? So,
Jesus.
And Chancellor House is an ANC investment arm. So, now, if you're a government, then you are going to sit and plan to loot state resources. Then you must give up.
General, I hear you. I hear you on the safety and the lawlessness and corruption, and all of those are very valid and very pressing issues. But I don't hear you talk about unemployment, which
I did mention.
Sitting with. So, what's your plan around unemployment?
The issue of unemployment is a complex one. First of all, we will have to look at the areas where we can invest as a state. In other words, the state has to play a role, private sector has to play a role. It's simple. What the NEDLAC is doing has failed this country because you always have tensions between and mistrust between the government is not trusted by business because they think it's too close to the labor, vice versa. Labor don't trust the business. I mean, the government, they say it's too close to the big business. So we need to start from there and say, guys, what role can the big business play in creating jobs, and where, in which areas, and what will be the role of the state? Take, for instance, after these rains, I'm just talking about the low-level LSMs. After these heavy rains, if you go to the rural areas, the soil erosion which has taken place there is massive. And then you also look at our rivers in those areas. You need to reinforce those areas. You can create thousands of jobs for the people in that category. And then you look at the kids who have who qualified, for instance, let's say on hospitality industry. Others are artists. Others are background artists. Others are fashion designers. Why don't we invest in that category as a state? So there's a lot. And then, obviously, we have to have a fund, national fund, to address those issues. And secondly, you also need to look at the companies from outside. What kind of incentives can you draw or can you bring up so that those people come and invest in South Africa? Or the companies which are in big cities, what incentives would you bring or put on table if you say go to rural areas or east provinces which are rural, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo?
General, I'd like to come in on this point, though, because a lot of what you're saying is to a large extent what, in fact, the ANC has been saying for the past 30 years in terms of we need this partnership between the public sector and the private sector. We need to put in these programs that are going to empower the youth. We need to create a sovereign wealth fund effectively. But and look, to a large extent, if you go back to the Mbeki, no, for sure. But if you go back to the Mbeki era, when we had a budget surplus, and at that point there was the possibility of creating a sovereign wealth fund, instead we put that money into social grants. So that was a decision that was taken back then. But on the question of jobs itself, so my take on jobs very simply is that the single thing that prevents jobs right now is a minimum wage. The very simple thing, because we have a deficit in terms of the number of jobs, but we put the price of bringing someone into the job market so high that most businesses can't afford it. So I'd like to hear what's your take on the question of a minimum wage. Do you support it? And also then, if we look in terms of our labor laws generally, one of the big problems that we have right now, and I say this as a person who's, you know, employed hundreds of people over my career, one of the things that actually holds back business from wanting to employ people is the fact that it is so difficult to fire people for incompetence, the very issues that you are raising. So I'd like your feedback on that.
Minimum wage, yes, is has to be respected, but there are certain categories. If I were to talk about that, if I start a business this year, and then immediately, even before the results have been announced as to whether I'm making profit or not, and then you say, from the start, you talk about a minimum wage, but depending on what kind of business. But for small business in particular, I think we need to review that, because people tend to be disillusioned by this and thus employ their own families.
But the problem with that is, let's say you start a small business and the small business becomes successful. If that small business wants to grow into a large business, they actually can't afford to do so, because then if they move into another category where it puts them into a higher wage bracket, the bottom falls off. And it becomes self-reinforcing that we have this constant buildup of small businesses that are never able to grow, just simply because
the answer to your question is simple. As a leader of a country, of government, you listen to people. If people are saying, let's review this legislation, that legislation is not cast in stone. it would have to be open for discussion. That's the answer I can give you.
Fair enough.
Can I ask a question quickly about something? And one of our listeners here says that the UDM in Gqeberha was among the most corrupt, and that municipality has been a disaster ever since. As someone who gave the UDM a vote in the past, I am jaded when you mention corruption. And the UDM has had to make bedfellows sometimes, which people question. This will happen more and more in coalition governments. People are going to find themselves having to compromise. Do you want to address that quickly?
Quickly, the UDM was not in charge of the municipality. It was a DA-led coalition. But the DA accused Bobani, who was our member working with Mr. Trollip, that he is suspected of being corrupt. And then Bobani said, no, you also bought a house for 3 million cash. So that kind of accusation to and from. And then we met as leaders. And then I said to the leaders of the coalition, these people are messing up this project. Best thing is that we must remove both of them, Trollip and Mr. Bobani. But DA flatly refused. Okay? I said, okay, if you now saying so-and-so has stolen money or what, please take him to the council. The ethics committee must review that. Secondly, report this individual to the police. DA did that, and they raided the offices of Mr. Bobani, and they didn't get it. I don't know what they found, but we gave them chance, and we told Bobani that, I mean, not Bobani, the whole South Africa, if this person is arrested, we'll suspend him immediately. That's a position which we put. We were not sangomas to say, yes, you can you breathe and say, did you do this or not do this? He denied it from us. He said, no, I'm not corrupt. And then we said, your fate will be decided by the council and by the courts.
Right.
And, well, I suppose one of the things that this raises, which everyone is cognizant of, is that we're going definitely post the election to find ourselves with multiple forms of coalitions of one form or another. Do you think that we have the political maturity to make it work eventually?
The short answer is we don't, Fumi. Come on, you know we don't have the political maturity.
Kenton, let the man speak for himself.
At national level, I'm optimistic it will work. In fact, we are going back to what Mr. Mandela and de Klerk once proposed for this country,
government of national unity.
Immediately, the checks and balances will be in place. And also the people who will be ministers, at least the caliber of that group, is not the same as at local government level. Some of the councillors don't even know how to read this document and regulations. So we have learned one or two things in the coalitions at local government. At national level, if it's there, it's going to work. You will call me here. It's going to work. I've been there before.
What do you make of the talk of two coalitions forming broadly in South African politics? The one being the multi-party charter group of people. And on the other side, we've got this ANC. Will they ever be able to come to terms with Zuma's MK? The EFF, what role will they play? Will those three band together? Could be very powerful if they did, for them.
Well, I think when you talk about the forthcoming coalition possibilities, there are three streams I see. is one led by the current tripartite alliance, ANC alliance partners. Second one will be the one led by DA, called Moonshot or whatever. What did you call it?
Multi-party charter.
And then the third one will be the group which is on the left of the ANC, which I think is needed for to keep the ANC on check. There you can possibly see MK, EFF, ZAPO, PAC, ATM, UTM. I'll be comfortable in that category, because the ANC has abandoned the original agenda and we have to sit on them. In order for Parliament to be effective, that is the crowd which on the left of the ANC, which understands the passage of the struggle. Some of us will continue to remind them. The more we are, more people who understands the original position of the ANC, the better. So there will be these three streams. So if, for instance, ANC comes to DA, they can agree and form a government. Or if ANC comes to the other crew, they will put conditions. They can agree and run South Africa. I'm not worried about this, but the sooner these elections come, the better.
And what are your chances in these elections?
Well, the United Democratic Movement has been betting on a wicket of promoting ethics of good governance, have been betting on a wicket of anti-corruption. Earlier on, when we began, I listed our successes. So why would a South African or a voter ignore a person who has been helping the democracy of South Africa, notwithstanding that we don't have big numbers? But we have been coming up with quality debates, introducing quality debates. So I expect, therefore, that the voters of South Africa will say, hey, Holomisa and UTM has been teaching us, creating awareness on this. So we have hit them for sixes and fours while we were occupying the Chris. I've just told you now that a national speaker is running all over. He was in France last week, police waiting for him. This week, we're told he's in USA. So that's UTM.
You're going to get it.
Daga Daga is off.
General, you mentioned two things that I think are unique to all the conversations we've had with other leaders. We had Kenneth Meshwe here last week. We had Herman Mashaba. We've spoken to Gayton McKenzie. And we're talking to as many of the leaders as we can, whether we'll get the big three in here. They're very arrogant, all three of them. But we'll try and get them in. You mentioned the rural areas. You have a strong support in the rural Eastern Cape. And most people are just disregarding and ignoring the rural areas. In fact, they are even saying, well, the parties like the ANC that are losing the urban vote are going to be condemned to be rural parties, and then we'll forget about them because clearly those people don't prioritize rural areas. So that's one thing I want to ask you some more about. The other word that you used was discipline, a word that not many other parties have used. And it comes from your military background. And some people in this country are now khatvol, and they need someone who's got some principle and some discipline and can instill some discipline in the rest of this country. Because that is missing. You see the way the place looks filthy. You see the way people conduct themselves on the roads badly. There are a lot of conservative, sensible South Africans who have family values at the center of maybe the church at the center of their moral compass. And they want someone who can enforce some rules. Is that not your strongest asset?
Well, speaking to a converted, because in my even our manifesto is addressing the issues related to lack of waste management and that South Africa is filthy, is dirty.
It's a dump.
It's one of the dirtiest countries in the continent. If you go to, in fact, some of you witnessed when I was in charge in Transkei, every public during public holidays, we would say people must clean their homes, they must clean highways, soldiers and police clean highways. And we ran a nice environment set up there. I wish one can arrange with the SANDF.
What's left of it?
Yes, just take, for instance, traditional leaders and some councillors, fly them to Rwanda and see the rural areas of Rwanda. See this, the urban setup. It's a Singapore of Africa, if I can say so. Just to go and see, how do you inculcate a culture of ownership? See how is it implemented? Then come back to your municipality. Maybe they will wake up a little bit. Yes, you need to be strong. Discipline starts from the leader, cabinet, DGs. It's like time frame. When you say let's agree on a deadline to implement this, and then on the eve of implementation, you find that the DG is not ready. It's lack of discipline.
Well, you know, I'm speaking of discipline. I'm also thinking about the number of young people we have on our voters' roll.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that message of discipline will excite enough young people to show up at the polls for you?
Well, the youth of today is I'm happy with the way they are. They seem to understand now that the future belongs to them and they need to shape it now. I'm optimistic that the youth of South Africa this time around will go out in numbers to vote. And we must also thank the initiative by Malema. Remember that the EFF was formed by the youth. And where it is today? So that should also encourage the youth of South Africa in general.
But at the same time, General, speak of the EFF and discipline same time is there's a bit of a contradiction there. And in fact, I would go so far as to say that one of the biggest problems that we have right now is the complete lack of discipline on the part of the likes of the EFF.
Well, if each political party has got its own tactics. So if you are going to come up with your own Bible and just pray every day, those boys have actually changed the political landscape of this country.
But not necessarily for the better.
That's fine. I'm not sure what to about that. But question of discipline, you cannot only say it's only this party. The whole society of South Africa is a breakdown. Even elders.
That's fair enough, and I'm agreeing with you.
Even elders, if you see them on the highways or in town, there's just an anger across the board.
You see, the reason why I mentioned the EFF in particular is because when you were describing the positioning of the political parties just now, and you drew the segmentation, shall we say, which are of parties to the left of the ANC, where you included the UDM, the EFF, the ATM, and so forth. And so, yes, I'm accepting that there's this complete lack of discipline at the other end of the spectrum. But if you are seeing yourself potentially in the same category to the left of the ANC, working with the likes of the EFF, and we have the EFF with this track record of a complete lack of discipline, a complete failure to respect the basic rules of decorum in Parliament. And how would you see yourself brother, working
my,
together?
My brother, don't worry about that. Wolomisa grew up in the environment of respecting the rules of government.
He's going to go in with his shambok.
Now, if we are part, we are discussing about establishing a cabinet, there has to be standards set first before and screening of the cabinet members. And to say, guys, if you do this, you don't toe the line, gate. Right? Simple.
Sounds like my dad.
I don't have any other way of describing the way.
Would you shambok Julius Malema if necessary?
No. Julius Malema is a leader of a party. Now, if we sit down,
I would shambok our president given the chance. And that's why I mention it.
Let him finish his thought. Julius Malema is a leader of a party.
Tantan just wants to shambok everyone.
He is a leader of the party. If we're talking about forming a government of national unity or coalition, we are going to draw the rules together. So if I mess up, then I should also be able to say, guys, I leave. So I'm not going to talk about, I'm not a Sangoma, but when you talk about a new government, the rules have to be, we have to lead by example, let me put it that way. If you have got a problem with Mr. Malema or EFF, that's your own baby. But here, people vote for that party. I say the youth of South Africa are now ready to vote. They have been shunning politics in the past. But give a credit where it is due. Malema started a political party, and that party was full of youth, and they are there. Now,
that's a fair comment.
I saw a video on social media a couple of days ago with the young Duduzane Zuba.
Mm-hmm.
He came to see you.
Duduzane.
Uh-huh. Are you willing to share with us what
why
your meeting?
You guys are curious, eh?
It's our job.
Curious.
Since it turned over in Dabazaband.
Yeah. You like call it a high level gossip.
It was an interesting, but I could never in a thousand years would have considered that he would do that to come and see you. And I'm just curious what the conversation was about and what advice you have for a young person with his multicolored, checkered background wanting to get into politics.
Well, we didn't discuss politics really with him. Duduzane grew up with my kids in Pretoria then, before he left for KZN or whatever. So he was in Pretoria. He felt that he should just pop in. Came in. I don't even think he spent 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
He just said, I'm in town. How are you? And so on. And then I said, Mr. President, wish you all the luck. And then he saluted and left.
Yeah.
Well, and that's interesting because the portrayal of just that little interaction was really one that, from his telling, was coming to you for advice and endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the information that is then sitting out in the public sphere that then says you've endorsed this young man, you shook his hand, you had this big conversation. And had we not had this conversation with you, we wouldn't know that this is what actually transpired.
But there's nothing wrong in really to be a father of all. Look, I was invited, for instance, to go and pass a message during the launch of the EFF. You remember in Rustenburg. And then in the opposition in parliament, the parties, they will always say, Bantu, can you call a meeting of the opposition parties? During 2016 election, we chased away ANC in the metros. I brought along EFF on the far left, Freedom Front Plus on the far right, and I said, guys, let's see, let's compare the numbers. We added them. We ended up saying ANC must go in the metros. We chased them away. So the people do have this, I don't know whether it's trust, but they like to consult me.
Well, you are. You've been there a long time. You know things. And it's unassailable to many that you have had relationships from the very early days in the 90s with all of these leaders. And throughout, when new leaders have come up, you've made an effort to get to know them.
For instance, I attack the president hard. But we play golf when we have time.
Yeah, but that's that golf? Is politics.
And you don't, you'll never see that in the continent.
Are you better at golf than him? Just got to know. Who's better? I see you wearing the Bantu Holomisa golf shirt. So
I know. Yes. He plays a good golf.
Oh,
does he?
But it's just that you can see he's got no time for.
Oh.
He's got no time for many other things.
Yes, he's busy.
Even his full-time job, he's got no time for. But bringing together different parties and bringing them to the table to start something is one thing. Mm. What we've seen in the metros, in the falling apart of those coalitions, has been a lack of somebody to hold it together.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that you have that role to play?
Yes, I will continue to play that role because I'm not ambitious for positions. All I need is look at the South Africa, look at our municipalities. But unfortunately, my experience with DA on coalitions, as well as ANC to some extent, they always want to play a big brother mentality and to say, pretend as if they have won elections. And I've been telling them that it's not going to work, but try and negotiate and agree and implement the policy. But of course, the destabilization of local government, metros and so on, is done by the ANC. They vowed, after we chased them away, to say we'll make this ungovernable. And they have achieved that.
Mm.
They have achieved that.
General, I'd like to do a bit of a historical note here. You started the UDM with Rolf Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious as to whether you still maintain contact with Rolf Meyer and how your views have either come together or moved apart from the time you founded the UDM.
Rolf Meyer is a gentleman, very disciplined individual. And when he left, he told me he had a family problem. Then he decided to say, I don't want this thing to be in the media and so on. I'd rather quietly leave, right? So he left. And then the ANC government made use of his services by going to countries where there's conflict to mediate and so on.
Yes, the Ireland conflict.
Yes. So he is a one of a rare species which is a good listener. So I meet him now and again, either in the functions or airport, and we chat. So he's still the same Rolf Meyer. I wish you had many Rolf Meyers in the DA, you would be far by now. But sometimes you begin to question the way they tackle issues. You see, when you have a government, in the foreign policy, even if you differ, you don't publicly attack a government Because if a government take a decision on foreign policy, you may differ with them, but you have a chance to engage them in parliament. Look at this thing when they wrote to USA. The same thing when they, on the issue of Middle East. If I were the leader of the DA, I would knock at the office of the president when I differ with him, so that we present this united front on issues of national interest. I find that it is lacking in this country. And of course, Cyril Ramaphosa is not even briefing us. Sometimes you can understand the frustrations by some.
It's a good point you raise, but one of the rebuttals that has come on the part of the DA, and I'd like your insight on this because you've been associated with the ANC for years. One of the rebuttals from the DA is, why should we not be approaching the United States because of the fact that the ANC is deeply in bed with the likes of China and Russia? And do you have any insights on whether that is in fact the case? And is there foreign money coming into our country right now? Because I personally am of the view that there shouldn't be foreign money influencing our elections at any level, whether it's the DA or the ANC.
The way I see it is that it's going to be difficult to control that sphere. Because you take, for instance, the relationship between ANC and Palestine. It's well documented.
Yes, but that was with the Palestinian Authority and the PLO before that.
Yes, wait. I say to you, there are historic relationships between political parties in this country and other countries elsewhere, ideologically and whatever you want to call it. But when it comes to issues of the nation, the country, our foreign policy, if there's going to be an action taken, the president of South Africa should call leaders and say, I'm proposing A, B, C, D, E. There might be controversies here and so on. That's what I'm praying. That's what my Madiba used to do anyway.
Yes, but I think also Canton's point about foreign money. You know, we're always worrying about the sovereignty of our country. And you saw there was this huge storm in a teacup this week about the election observers that were called by... Look, the DA sometimes gets the messaging wrong. Some parties get it wrong more than others.
Yes.
But what if Russia and China are directly funding one of the parties, or Iran for that matter?
Frankly, it doesn't matter who it is.
No, we don't want foreign powers or even NGOs, frankly.
No, the rules in this country is that you must declare. That's point number one. But if you are going to take a government jet and fly to Saudi Arabia and then bring dollars here and keep them in your house, that is wrong.
If that were to happen.
So the question of the foreign monies coming to South Africa to fund political parties, maybe our act, party funding legislation, is not tight enough. Because it should also have a rider to say, if you do this and you don't declare, you will be disqualified to participate in the election.
Penalties. And who funds the UDM?
The UDM is funded by IEC as well as the parliament constituency. And then I fundraise from my friends. But more importantly, the UDM in the last 26 years, I've been using my property in Mthatha and Mkanduli to provide security, a guarantee. So then the UDM can take millions there and run the elections, and then they pay back the bank until then my property is free. I don't have time to move around and ask for money.
But I
saw others now are getting, new parties are getting millions and millions. So I've also written letter also asking from these big companies who are doling them.
Yeah. But they're giving to others, they must give to you.
But I will declare. So
So this raises one question which I also asked Kenneth Meshwe about.
Mm-hmm.
You have been at the head of the UDM since inception.
Mm-hmm.
Currently you have 2 seats. Mm-hmm. In Parliament. Mm-hmm. You hold the one.
Mm-hmm.
What is the UDM's succession plan
mm-hmm.
outside of you? When you are no longer there and your properties and all of the work that you do, is the UDM going to die with you?
I don't think UDM will die with me. Because if you look at the youth I'm promoting, the deputy president is young, Ngabayo Mzikhwangwa, and if you have watched him speaking, you won't say this is a young person, it's matured. The Secretary General currently is 35 years old. Last year he wrote his master's. If you look at the other councillors, they are graduates at from WUSU, University of Fort Hare, those who are in the Eastern Cape. So I'm satisfied with the succession plan. The question is, you see, this democracy sometimes is not right, because the parties you want to leave, and then the structures say, no, we want to vote for you to continue as a leader. That's democracy.
Listen, the IFP are currently struggling with who they put on their posters.
Yo, I saw Mangosuthu Buthelezi is still on the posters. Yes. Sure.
Listen.
Well, their slogan is do it for Shaggy.
Jesus Christ is on the cross in every church 2,000 years later.
So at the right time, my sister, at the right time, my time will come to leave. And I can't wait to go and play golf and travel around the country. I still need to tour South Africa. People don't know South Africa. It's a beautiful country.
Mm. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Let's keep it that way. Let's make it better still. All right, General, let's get you in there to keep these people disciplined, these children.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for coming to see us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Lots of questions we didn't get a chance to ask you, but you've answered everything that we wanted to know this morning. And it's good to see you again.
When are you launching your campaign? We just spoke with the marketer, advertising man, in the last hour, and he said maybe everybody is waiting now that we know the date. When is your campaign being launched?
I've been campaigning since last year.
So, what's your campaign message? What's your slogan this year?
The slogan of the UDM says, corruption destroys our freedom.
It's about right.
There you go.
I would change it to Shambok the Bastard.
order, comrades.
All right, on that note, thank you, everybody. We will see you tomorrow. Cheers.